Hey, you've probably heard about vibe coding and maybe even tried it yourself, but you ever think about the security of that code? Well, stick around. We have an expert that's going to tell you all about it on this episode coming up. Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. My name is G. Mark Hardy. I am your host for today, and I am accompanied by Nitzan Ziv. Welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. How are you doing? It's a pleasure to be part of the show today.
Well, that's great. Now, I'm going to introduce him in a moment, but quick, a little bit of background. If you're watching the podcast from YouTube, great. Make sure you're subscribing. If you're listening to us, subscribe or tell other people about it so we can go ahead and make sure that other folks can improve their CISO tradecraft as well. Now, for the concept of vibe coding, Nitzan, you're going to be talking about VibeSec, which is sort of short for vibe coding security. And really, you're the expert, so I'm going to listen to you tell me a little bit about what vibe coding security is all about and the like. But first of all, tell me a little bit about yourself. What got you to where you are today?
Okay, so first of all, before starting Ox Security, 10 years at Check Point leading the cybersecurity business unit. So had the opportunity to do quite a lot on the network side, on the endpoint side, on the cloud side. Super exciting times. But then we kind of understood the future is going back to the code. So every few years, it's a trend. Where is it? It was infrastructure, then moved to cloud, then moved from cloud back to code. And I think this is where most of the transformation in the AI space is actually happening right now, changing the way developers think about code.
Interesting. And so all those years of security experience, you started Ox Security, which is pretty cool. I have a lot of admiration for founders. I found a couple of companies myself. Some are still around, some are not. And I understand that it's a little bit of a tough, but at that point, you sound like you're focusing on vibe coding security. Well, first of all, when did vibe coding really get started and what do people do with that? Let's kind of go with the basics first. What is vibe coding?
Okay, so I'll first say that the first time I've seen vibe coding is some of the, I would say, IDEs released a mode. Originally, they call it YOLO, which is you only live once, meaning you give me a command or an intent and I'll build it for you. And that was an impressive thing. Just like, okay, just merge it into my code and that is absolutely fine. And beginning of this year, 25, it actually became a thing where you started seeing Cursor just blow up in valuation and Lovable and Base 44 and, of course, Windsurf. So we started seeing a lot of movement and that was very, very different from what we've seen with Copilot over the past 2 years, which is just autocomplete and like basic tasks. This is a new interface where you write the intent and somebody else is going to do this, writing local commands. It became a different thing. It's unlike what we've seen in previous years.
I mean, does it really work? I've had people tell me that they're writing code that is going in commercial use, that they've just described what they want, and they've got a Python script or something else that's written for them in some language. According to them, it works, but I'm a little bit suspicious about that because how do you know it's really working correctly?
First of all, amazing question. This is kind of the basis of AI. Think about AI as you've got this window of token. This is where you can add more and more information that generates the output. The more accurate data you're going to place in this token window, the better result you're going to get. Now, you don't give enough information, you're going to get to the right side. This is the hallucination zone. You're going to get a very good and accurate answer only if you provide a very good, I would say, baseline to what are you actually asking. I think what the industry is getting better at is actually understanding what context do I want to provide. And if we know what is the right context, you're going to get the right answers. And we're starting to see projects created, like you said, just by prompts. Nobody even knows what language they're implemented behind the scenes. And it's becoming a new brave world. It's not what we grew up on.
Yeah, that seems quite amazing to me because I used to be a commercial developer years ago, and I know exactly what's taking you right, and you run it and work and tweak it, and then you might even go to production, then you find out, oh, wait a minute, some user put some input I didn't think about, and it caused some unintended results, and now we have to go out and patch it and fix it. But instead, what we have today is sort of a fire-and-forget methodology where I think I've prompted it up well enough. I've got some code. I may or may not understand how it works, but it seems to work. And then off it goes into production, and you move on to the next and the next and the next project. Well, what's missing in all that from our perspective is, well, security, right? I mean, we ought to have security in the typical way we do that, such as the software development lifecycle, and we look at it and even have DevSecOps. But where is security typically missing, and what do you see? It might be just vibe coding. It might be other places. Where should security be added?
So the way that I describe it to our internal developers is think about vibe coding as a very, very eager junior developer.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning they're going to spit a lot of code, which might be good or not, and the volatility is very high. Now, where do we see this? You see this where our developers are going to use an IDE to go into existing code and say, hey, please add this API. Now, you would expect an expert developer to say, okay, everything is protected by JSON Web Tokens. I need to do the same thing, and I need to do this. And comes a new AI into this project saying, great, you wanted me to open an API? I'm going to do that. But what about authentication? What about right now sanitizing the inputs? Now, you hadn't defined it. The task was completed as you expected it. But now you're actually expecting developer to say, hey, when you're saying this, also think about the security implication. And this becomes simply impossible.
Yeah. And then when you think about it, a couple of thoughts come to mind. One is it's going to train on whatever data it can find. And there might be 100,000 GitHub repositories out there that are open to the public says, oh, there's a bunch of code and I can see how people code. That is not code written by world-class experts. There is bad code in there. There's vulnerable code in there. There's stuff that's actually malicious, most likely, as well as the good stuff. And that all gets brought in as part of the training base that's often used to go ahead and code. So what an old experienced programmer may know to say, hey, let me follow things like the OWASP top 10 and not do that and the like, we might find out that a lot of that code base just never benefited from it. So the reality is that vibe coding, it might run, but it's running on a flawed security model. Would you think that's a true statement?
Yeah, I would extend it even more. It's not just security oriented. It's everything it requires more expertise. You'll have the same with performance. You have the same with UI. You're going to say, meaning it's everything that is above the average, which is what we usually need when we're building something as a pet project. You need something that is more than the average. And in this case, security, we've seen mistakes where AI saw the existing code, say, hey, why are we adding this complexity? Just remove the code, the security code. Now, if you don't understand what's going to happen, and to be frank, nobody understands what's going to happen because it's kind of impossible. You're just outsourcing this. And with the new IDEs, it's like you don't even need to see the code anymore. So you don't know that security was ignored. Mm-hmm. And that becomes an issue. It's like, okay, we need to figure out how do you do this in the new world. Previous world, training, audit, and so on. New world, this is changing so fast. We have developers, our top developers, sometimes are doing like 2,500 lines of code a day. We're using vibe coding. That is a lot. That is like three times the average. That is impressive.
It is. And of course, if you're measuring just on the number of lines of code, it's impressive. And if we go back to look at some of the old way that the Soviet Union to try to go ahead and said, hey, look, we have a glass factory and you're going to get a quota and you have to manufacture, 1,000 tons of glass. So they go, okay, fine. And they make one gigantic blob of glass. Okay, there you go. It's 1,000 tons. It's done. We're done for the year. Nope, that's not what we meant. So it has to be so many square meters of glass. So they make it so really, really thin that it breaks upon contact with the real world, but they meant that. And so we find out then that these artificial goals really don't drive you toward excellence at all. And so that as we enjoy the increased productivity of our programmers doing the vibe coding. We don't know, for example, whether or not that code, beyond accomplishing the main task, if you drive right down the middle, no errors, no attempt to put weird inputs in there, nobody trying to glitch the system. Okay, sure, it'll work. And that sounds great for prototype, but using it for production sounds pretty dangerous. Now, you've got other things as well, the source control system, CI/CD pipelines, artifact registries, all those things might get overlooked by somebody who's not really a security person, but as an attacker, I may go after those things. And so what it seems like then is we got multiple faces to this vulnerability that we have, and our attack surface is actually getting bigger without necessarily improving. So what do we do about that? Is this something we just say, hey, this is terrible, we have to go back and program by hand? Or can we do this correctly, but we just have to add in that missing piece?
So I think that there is no undo anymore. This is done. Yeah. It's happening. The reason for that, it simply, it creates simplicity for people that need to generate and deliver code. It allows them to get to their goal faster with less training, with less memory usage. It's better. It's faster. Meaning the guys that we in our office enjoy it. They're saying, I'm way more productive. It's unlike what we had 2 years ago, which is autocomplete and just copy paste to avoid looking at Stack Exchange. This is production grade, but, and this is the issue, the context window, somebody needs to be responsible for this one in terms of security. This is what today AppSec is doing with developers, saying, I need to be part of their attention. I need to make sure that they understand. I need to make sure that when they're delivering code, they're going to see it. I'm going to train them. I'm going to have captured the flag. I'm going to get, this is something that now you're not, don't need to do with humans. You need to do it with the context window of your vibe coding agent, which is weird, but it is actually way, way more efficient.
Interesting. So if I've got an existing process, let's say I've got my source controls up in GitHub or Azure or something like that, and then I can do some static analysis on that using some tools that are out there. Look for secrets, PII, and things like that, maybe open source security checks. It sounds like there's a whole bunch of different things that ought to be part of my life cycle of doing security. But rather than have to have 20 different individual steps and hoping that somebody doesn't forget one, is there a way to stitch all that together so it becomes sort of a consolidated business process that we know that things have been looked at correctly?
So I think that the transformation that we're going to see, especially with VibeSec, is that we're moving from detecting and shifting left and hoping for somebody to treat this seriously to a new concept, saying, why don't we just tell you up front what you want? Now, in developer world, it was very hard. Somebody had to actually think about it up front. In vibe coding, actually, hey, we know everything about your code. We know where it is, where it's going to be deployed, how it's going to be built, how it's going to be exposed to an internet. We know all of this up front. So we don't need to do lift and shift. We need to do, let's rethink this strategy. Let's just make sure that the vibe coding agent has everything that you need to know about the context of security, so developers will never have to think about security. It's going to be an afterthought for them. They don't need to understand what is happening behind the scenes.
Wow. And so what we do, we're moving from a realm where we have developers, if we don't train them in things such as, for example, OWASP Top 10, if they're building web apps, they go ahead and they make cross-site scripting errors. They go ahead and allow all kinds of mistakes that would be what we would call rookie mistakes. Mm-hmm. But after they've been doing it for a few years, they get better at it, and the amount of errors per 100 lines of code drops significantly, maybe down pretty close to zero, at least errors from the perspective of that. Well, we don't get better in the world because we're always adding new people. And so, yes, the older people may be better, but the new people you just hired, they're going to be making the same mistakes that the new people made last year or the year before. Yeah, within reason. So now, though, what you've said is a fundamentally different paradigm. So let me get my head around this. Instead of talking about shifting left, we're going to go ahead and early in the phase, go ahead and do all this stuff. We're actually embedding security into my entire life cycle so that the new programmer, or a seasoned programmer for that matter, who's using a completely new tool, vibe coding, where they simply describe, hopefully with sufficient detail to avoid a hallucination, exactly the result that they're looking for, and the AI tool writes the code. But beyond that, if they don't think to ask for secure data handling, secure memory management, secure this, as you had said, it might be stuff that the code says, well, that's not needed. And it reminds me of years ago, my first car I ever had, my dad bought a Fiat X19, 1975. Okay, so it was a while ago. And it was a California car, but we lived in the East Coast. And he said he took out two grocery bags full of components out of the engine compartment. There were all the emission controls for California, and it ran just fine. And so I drove the car without all the emission controls for the rest of the time I had the car. So in a way, it's sort of like saying, hey, security, who needs this? Well, the problem, of course, is it's not so much compliance as it is a real vulnerability that you're not fixing at all. So that new paradigm is, am I catching that correct? If I talk about vibes,
It is. What we're saying is simply shift left as a concept failed us, but the industry couldn't provide anything better for years. And for the first time, we've got a shot at doing something in a different way.
So now I think we're at the point where we could say, if I get this, if I'm listening to this episode and I say, wow, this is huge, but I need to communicate this to my CIO or maybe a CTO, but I don't have 20 minutes to explain the concept. What would be a good way to encapsulate this whole concept of VibeSec to get that other C-level officer to say, you're onto something. I want my people to hear more about this. Let's get a bigger, longer meeting. How would you introduce that concept?
I would say it's very simply. We've been paying those older AppSec detection platforms for years, a lot of money, but we couldn't move the needle. We've tried. We've hired people. We're spending a lot of money on this. We are always with an expanding backlog. I think I've got something new to show you.
So it's really a efficiency as well as cost savings, not just security, right?
Of course. It's a different concept, saying the old methods are simply, they were good to the pre-AI era. Mm-hmm. And now we've got something better. We can actually do something that says, let's remove this entire concept of risks coming from AI. From humans. It's not a human thing. It never worked. Nobody wanted to do this. Let's offload this.
Wow. So what you're doing at Ox Security, does it only work for vibe coding, or is there some benefit for organizations that are kind of ramping on to vibe coding, but they want to make sure they do it right from the beginning?
So everybody that is using modern IDEs that have the vibe coding concepts, mm-hmm. Cursor, VS Code, anything like that, they've got it already up and running. If you're still using things that are without vibe coding, like traditional development environment that do not have the ability to use vibe coding, you can still work in the traditional shift left concept. It's just that we've seen it doesn't bring the value that you wanted. The backlog keeps exploding. You're constantly chasing. It's not a sustainable thing. Everybody just hated you. You're constantly playing whack-a-mole.
Yeah, so with those, typically in those IDE, and you're going to use a plugin to do a scan for bugs or check for lint, delint.
Exactly. For the old yes. The old generation, that, yes. New generation, different concept.
Yeah.
It doesn't work even the same.
And it doesn't. Now, how about a SAST tool, a static code analysis tool? Can I go ahead and have something vibe coded up and hand it over to my existing SaaS and say, hey, have at it. Are there any problems? Or am I really kind of mixing oil and water here?
No, you can do this upfront, meaning take the code that was generated, vibe code with VibeSec, put it into SaaS, you'll see nothing. The code that is going to be generated is going to be clean.
And yet it might functionally have some characteristics that could come back and bite us at some point, because it's not going to be necessarily that obvious what the issue is. And again, I think it comes back to the training data. Now, it gets more interesting when we start having our vibe coding interacting with other things using MCP or Model Context Protocol. Mm-hmm. And Nitsa, can you tell us a little bit more about using a MCP in an IDE for those who are doing alphabet soup, Model Context Protocol?
Yeah.
Integrated development environment. And what are the pros and cons, and what are the dangers to be careful of, and what are the opportunities?
Okay, so for those of you who do not know MCP at the moment, MCP, think about it as the way to wrap API for the AI world. Some describe it as the USB of AIs. That's also a fair definition, but the easiest way to me to think about it as you had APIs before, you could call API, get a response. Now you're saying, hey, let's declare this API so an AI actually knows how to call this API. And now you can have one AI talking with another AI or an API using this MCP protocol. Now, what this allows you to actually say, hey, why don't we have the vibe coding agent constantly communicating with the ecosystem to understand what are we seeing, what's around, how can we do this? And this is the funny thing, that you can actually use this protocol to do way, way better than before. Not to be mixed with IDE extension, which is, think about it like a browser add-on that you can just install and it adds functionality to your development environment.
Interesting. Now, do we end up with any additional security risk using MCP? Because obviously we're interacting with something else. So it seems that there might be some particular things we need to be aware of, or is this something that, if you will, you've already thought of and said, yeah, go ahead, use it anyway, because we're protecting it from this.
So MCP, once again, goes to the same problems that you have with API. It's just a mask over API. Mm-hmm. In what sense? If you're using a vulnerable API framework, like we've seen with a few MCP that were vulnerable by design, then yeah, you're using a middleware that is going to fail. Simple, very easy to fix. The challenges become on the higher level, saying, let's say that you're opening an API and I'm just allowing everybody that comes in to see all my customer base. Well, you would say this is a bad idea, but we already had some of those famous breaches doing exactly that. Let's say one of the famous bicycle company, for example, had this case mm-hmm. a few years ago. So in this case, we're saying, hey, we need to take the same design principle and just transform them to MCP.
Well, if we do that and we think about not just doing it internally within our development environment, but working with partners, working with our supply chain, does this introduce some potential supply chain risk for malicious code being introduced by somebody perhaps upstream that doesn't have a good security check involved?
Always. Once again, it's the same problems with API. If one of your suppliers doesn't have authentication the right way, yes, you're going to have issue coming to this system. Now, I think the challenge is a bit different. Everybody's right now trying to figure out, hey, how do I actually build security into AI? So you've got all of those chatbots that need to get information, but they need to do it with a certain identity. If they're using like a generic identity or not a scoped identity, they can have access to everything. So you can get to something very, very similar to scam or fraud, just abusing trust versus abusing the system.
Yeah, and MCP is different than RAG. You know, so if I'm going ahead and looking like retrieval augmented generation, that would allow me to ask something like a ChatGPT, whose cutoff date for training might have been 10 months ago, to say, who won the ballgame last night? And they can go out there and interface with a search engine and come back and say, yay, your favorite team won. But here we're talking about something a lot more capable. This is actually not just grabbing a piece of information and sending it back, but you have this as part of a business process that can move along, and at which point we really need to be careful before we just quote-unquote press the I believe button, the thing is working correctly. So any strategies for organizations that say, hey, yeah, we like this, we embrace it, we think it's the way forward, it's going to give us more efficiency, it's going to give us more effectiveness, but we're going to take the risks seriously. What are some of the ways that organizations can start mitigating some of those risks even before they get going, but especially if they are already doing the vibe coding and using it as part of their production environment, what can they do to catch up?
So I probably say that the number one thing that everybody should be aware of is think about what identity you're actually using from the agent that you're using. If you're using an agent that is unrestricted, like most of us have done at the beginning of the year, mm-hmm. this means that if somebody gets a hold of this identity using fraud or using conviction of the agent, then they've got access to everything that this identity has. If you're saying, I'm going to scope this identity, So even if you do something and convince the agent to do something that is not intended, the data that you can access is scoped to your identity, then the risk becomes minimal. It is becoming very, very similar to an API authentication.
Hmm. And so really, it's almost a little bit like a zero trust environment as well, where I'm going to have limited access based upon what someone's permissions are. I'm going to validate that every single time. So in case somebody has corrupted or turned an agent, it can't go ahead and start harvesting my entire enterprise's stuff and things like that. Exactly. So
if it's scoped, then it is scoped. But it's a design pattern that everybody kind of had to learn really fast. And you think about it, and it seems like an obvious decision, but this is something that the industry just learned, let's say, June timeframe this year.
Yeah, it moves very quickly. So if I've got some developers that are doing vibe coding, I would think that that's kind of overt. Yeah, okay, fine, here's what I'm doing. And I've seen little jokes about the guy. He's like, wait a minute, it's only 10:30. Why are you leaving? Oh, man, I ran out of tokens for the day. I'll be back Monday. And it's like, I'm a programmer. It's like, no, that's not how it works. But also, are some of the IDEs now on the back end, like Cursor, would they be using Claude or some other type of AI tool to help providing coding recommendations? And all of a sudden, if you will, the camel's nose is coming under the tent, even if we're not overtly using a vibe coding strategy. Is that also a risk?
Just to make sure, if you're asking whether the risk is by using those modern IDEs?
Well, the modern IDEs are going to give some recommendations, I would think, for coding, okay?
Yes.
And those are now being provided by, if you will, the same models that are giving the programmers ways of writing their own code or writing the code for them. And so although I might say, well, hey, I don't have vibe coding yet turned on with my developer team, they may be using sort of a first derivative thereof. So this really is the direction we're going. And that means anybody who's writing code, even if you think you're not doing AI coding, you're probably doing AI coding. And that should be a wake-up call for anybody out there who has their own development environment to take a closer look at this.
I think that from the hundreds of customers that we are serving and the amount that we're actively right now replacing existing vendors, I'd probably say that 80, 90% of them are already in vibe coding in different capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm saying vibe coding, I'm not talking about developers paying $20 a month. I'm talking about a corporate agreement that, yes, we are paying as a company, we're paying for this new fancy ID.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I think it's 70, 80% of our install base are there already.
Interesting. So what if we have things for malicious models that are put up there? Let's say, for example, like Midjourney. I put up a model that's claimed I can give you free access so you can make AI pictures. Oh, wow, that looks like a great library. Let me grab it, throw it in there. But this thing is actually stealing his information, stealing data. Is there any way that you could scan for that, can use MCP to look at that and say, hey, wait a minute, it's asking for stuff it shouldn't, or it's pulling stuff it shouldn't, and then stay away from it? How do we protect ourselves? Again, it's kind of a sort of a supply chain attack, but not our customer supplier supply chain in the business flow. It's rather the tool set supply chain.
So I think it goes a bit to third-party risk assessment.
Mm-hmm.
In the place that you're saying, hey, I've seen as part of your code that you're using a new access to a new SaaS service. And saying, hey, this is something that wasn't reviewed yet. We don't have an agreement with them. They hadn't signed any AI addendum. So yes, you can see it in the code. It's very easy to find those cases both by packages and by URLs.
Mm-hmm.
But I must say that it is always a surprise when you do this for the first time, seeing, oh my God, who are all of those vendors? How is it possible that we're paying them and I've never heard about them? And every POC usually ends up with finding a few of those. They're saying, this is really, really bad. But this is the part of the business, because developers move fast. They don't necessarily know exactly the details of what they're doing. They bought a small account, got a credit card from somebody, less than $100. Nobody had to approve it. It's part of the system. It grew. Now it's in production. And now you're getting answers saying, hey, we can't rip that off right now. It's already in production.
Yeah, so there's two elements. One is in production. The other one is they signed up for it for $20 a month, forgot about it, but the $20 a month goes out every month and you're paying for stuff that's really shelfware. It's not even making it to the shelf. It's just not even being pulled off the cloud and things like that.
Yes.
So if I go back to the concept of, you know, our old approach of static software analysis tools, like a SAS tool, and typically I'd say, okay, I got a batch of code. I scan the code. It's written by humans. It says, okay, you got 200 vulns. Oh, man, I got to go back and fix those all. If it's 30 minutes to fix each one, that's 100 hours of recoding. Now, two things that could take place. One might be, with MCP, say Copilot, Claude, you know, whatever tool you're using, hey, go fix those things. And a few minutes later, it's all done. Or the alternative, which you had alluded to earlier, and I want to make sure I heard this correctly. You said that if I'm using the Vibe tools correctly for Vibe coding, when I submit it to a SAST, I should get a reading of zero. It's not going to deliberately put stuff in there. It's going to filter that out. So what's the more likely outcome? Are we going to find out that as we move from human to full Vibe coding, well, we still have the human stuff. We have to do the SAS and the DAS and the other things like that. But those could be trusted over to engines for mitigation, saying, hey, here's the list of outputs. Hey, go fix this code monster. And eventually get to the point where the coding tool is doing it all for us, at which point it seems like the old SAS tools aren't going to be all that valuable, which might mean those companies might be looking for a new business model in a couple of years once Vibe coding really becomes the primary way of doing business.
To be honest, I think that the SaaS industry became commoditized completely. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've seen any interesting innovation for the past 10 years in this industry. And I must say that all the modern languages are kind of, you're getting the same results from each and every one of the vendors. Mm-hmm. There's nothing fancy about it. Yes, you've got context. Yes, but this is not part of the traditional SaaS. This is more of the ASPMs of the world. And just doing SaaS, yeah, I'd probably say that this is very close to zero value versus like what everybody else is offering. If somebody's paying right now money just for that, you can probably reuse the money in a better way.
Yeah, that's a good insight. And I think a lot of what we're talking about is efficiency, and that's why we're going in this direction, to squeeze a little bit more value out of our IT and subsequently our IT security budget without introducing any unnecessary risk as an exchange. Now, if we take a look, I mentioned, I think a couple times, OWASP top 10. And we look at those things like SQL injection, cross-site scripting, and a lot of us could probably rattle them off given enough time and could think about them. But there's other types of vulnerability lists that are out there because not everything is a web app. And you might have things such as OWASP has their top 10 API security risks. Business logic abuse risk, CI/CD security risks, LLM, Gen AI, machine learning, non-human open source software, even probably serverless. All of a sudden, we find out that there might be 80 different types of risks out there, and we've only been having our programmers looking at 10. So that's not very good coverage. How do we get that? Does that all get taken care of here by like the tools that vendors like yourself are writing? And if so, yeah, then it really does improve our ability to make sure all of our attack surface is getting a good once over instead of being, oh man, I didn't even realize that was a problem.
So this is kind of the problem. There is updates like we had like a few weeks ago saying, hey, the list is now updated. The top 10 now includes things, and some of things we said 3 years ago are no longer in the top 10. They were moved. Mm-hmm. Now, if you double click into what is in the top 10, it's actually top 10 buckets, not top 10 techniques. So you open them and say, oh, in this bucket, I've got 23 different methods. Interesting. So in reality, you're kind of getting not to the place that you're saying, I just need to remember 10. Yeah, you kind of need to remember like 180. And
yeah, so it's like a MITRE. Possible. Yeah, like the MITRE attack framework where you have tactics and techniques. Okay, yeah, you've only got so many columns, but a ton of stuff in each column. Yeah, there's a lot of way to accomplish that.
So this is not doable, meaning this is why shift left just failed us year after year. This was the best we could do. It's just not a viable strategy. We're asking too much from developers that are already overloaded. They already have the entire ecosystem right now saying, hey, you need to be more efficient, run faster, and do majestical things using AI. And everybody's just trying to make it. And now it's saying, hey, security again. It's like, let's remove this problem from the table. Let's just outsource it.
I love that. Now, that works great for my IT developer team. We get it. they're professionals. We tell them, here's the way it's going to go. We bought a tool, plug it in, off they go. What about the citizen developers, the people who are in marketing departments said, hey, man, I need to whip up something for analyzing customer data, or I want to create a landing page for a little thing like that. So boom, 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 off they go ahead and they vibe code something there. How do we go ahead and make sure that all the members of our team are going to be protected rather than just the special few who are in the IT developer shop?
First of all, this is the vast majority, and this is where most of the risks actually come from. Second, the risk is a bit different, and I'll explain. If you're just doing static pages, nobody cares. No risk. Mm-hmm. The risk becomes interesting when you're starting to say, hey, I've got database data, or I need to access some resources, which means two things, one implied and one explicit. Implied, it means that you're going to have an identity because you're going to negotiate with a database or whatever microservices you've got to get access to this data. Question number one, how is this secret actually being stored? And this is kind of an unsolved problem at the moment. Second, let's say that I do have this access to database. Great. Go back to identity. What identity is in there? What data can I get? And it becomes more of a threat modeling risk endeavor than actually a technical problem.
So it's not just the programming, but as you had said, the identity. What can that person or that system, or you know, if it's a system identity, a non-human identity, can access a lot of stuff. And I think a lot is just keeping everything in a little compartment, making sure we set our environment up so the average user doesn't get super access to things that anybody would think, yeah, that's not a good idea if they're going to be writing code. And I get that. So that gives me a good question now is we're trying to figure out, how do I do reporting? If I say, hey, I get the vision, I'm going to call Ox Security, hey, you guys straighten me out and you get in here, how do I go back and tell my management team on a regular basis how much VibeSec is doing to help safeguard our organization, quantify that investment so I can say, hey, you know what, this is probably one of the best things that we bought this year?
Two things. One is that since we have telemetry, we actually see how many issues we prevented. We're actually writing like a remark in code saying this was created using vibe coding. The interesting reason for that, by the way, is that you're going to have AI coming to this code again. And part of the instruction we're giving, hey, if you see this code, it's security, it needs to be there. Don't optimize it. AI would
You're inoculating your code against further AI.
Exactly. Because it would just come in and say, hey, I see here a bunch of lines that doesn't really change or achieve the goal. Remove them. It's just inefficient. And we've seen this done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And say, so you got to be careful that we don't want a user saying, hey, I don't want my code rewritten by AI. So I just put all these comments in there. And then the software angel of death passes over my code and says, oh, yeah, everything's fine. Off you go. So, yeah, there's always a new concern about that. But yeah, so now I have reporting.
The best description I've heard about it. Yes.
Yeah. And so I have reporting numbers. I can go back and say, hey, these are the number of vulns that were discovered. This is the number of potential errors that we have avoided, which really is more of a risk reduction than it is an economic equation. But I would argue in doing that this helps economically justify the move to vibe coding, because we're saying, look, this is great that we're all going to use automobiles instead of horse-drawn buggies, but the seatbelts are absolutely important. They go a lot faster, but they can hurt you a lot more if there's a problem. So I think that we're finding, and as we're evolving our reporting metrics, you can justify the amount of code that's been identified. You can go ahead and come a cost justification to say, hey, this vibe coding initiative is worth it because not only has it saved us money, but look, we've been able to reduce the attack surface at the same time, making it even a better code base. Anything else you can think of that would help me build the business case for why I would want to move forward with this?
I think that number one is simply making sure the developers offload this from their head. That's his number one priority. This is the source of most friction between security and engineering. Mm-hmm. Just the chasing. You need to constantly chase somebody to do this work. You open the JIRA, you're looking for it. And then they're saying, we've got this deadline, we need to finish this, we'll get to this in two or three sprints. We're saying, hey, it's kind of out of the SLA, I'm kind of obligated to do that. What can we do about it? And it's negotiating from a position of, it's like, you know your restrictions, you can't do better. On the other hand, there's a person on the other side saying, hey, I've got my own restrictions, priorities, coming back from management, I kind of need to be there. I'll try to do the best to also comply with what you want. And just, it's a discussion that doesn't make sense. Let's remove that.
Yeah. So now we've got a way forward. Now, some of the stuff that we're talking about, we've talked about, well, this was different back in January. This was different back in June. What helps us to future-proof what we're doing to make sure we don't make an investment only to find out 3 to 6 months later it's rip and replace everything because the entire model has changed? Where's our confidence that this is the right way to go?
So I think that as we're moving towards this new brave world, we kind of need to understand there is no guarantee. You are in the frontier right now. This is the Wild West. This is, you can't future-proof everything. The future happens in such a fast pace that just models, let's say GPT-5 replaced by GPT-5.1, zero visibility on this, and just, hey, wake up, everybody, we've got 5.1, enjoy your new discovery, and then who knows what's inside of it. Meaning it is better, I really like it, but tomorrow is going to be 5.2, and now in the mix you're throwing the new Grok and new models coming in. And Cursor just announced their own model right now, which is amazing. But it's like, you don't have any way to future-proof. You need somebody that is constantly understanding the ecosystem and is able to react fast. If you're going to build this on the fundamentals that we used to do things 5 years ago, saying, I'm going to design it, I'm going to do this, you're already lost. You need to start thinking like we did the lift and shift when cloud began, saying, oh, we've got a server, I'll take it and put it in the cloud. And then everybody said, yeah, it doesn't work like this. You need to rethink about re-architecting the system. You need to think about microservices. You need to think about elasticity. Mm-hmm. It's a different concept. The concept is that risk and change is part of the model.
Interesting. I think it's a very, very good point. It's a new model. It's a new way of doing business. And their old paradigms aren't going to work. And for companies or IT departments that are a little bit slow to adoption, they're going to face some competitive pressures. Not the fact that what they're doing doesn't work. It certainly does to an extent because it's how we got to this year. But it's going to be a competitive disadvantage going forward because they're going to fall behind. They're not going to be able to keep up. And there may be the old classic grind it all out and find all the vulns and fix them rather than using the tools and then an additional adult supervision like Ox Security to go ahead and make sure it's done correctly. So as we get close to the end of the show here, if somebody says, hey, Nathan, this is awesome, I want to learn more, where do people find out more information and how do they, you know, what can they do with this?
So they can go to our website, ox.security. This is where they can contact us if they want to get educated on what are the things out there, how can we get more information, how can we join conferences. There's a great site called vibesec.io. It's a community site that is all about sharing information and sharing what's going out there. And we are publishing on a weekly basis the top headlines in the industry and our view on what does it mean. So if you need like a quick gist on, hey, what's happening this week so I can educate myself and come Monday morning educated on what's the latest buzzwords and what happened over the weekend, we're just providing this as a service to everybody.
And it looks like there's VibesecCon in IRL. First, I was thinking Ireland, but no, it's in San Francisco.
No. This is the in real life. So yes, we had the virtual one, and this is the IRL, but going back to the good old, what was it called? The IRC days.
Yes, they always say it. So this will be San Francisco, March 23rd, if anybody goes to the website that you just pointed to, ox.security. So actually, there's .security. I remember those are like expensive domains. So well done on that.
That's expensive.
Yeah. And I asked them, I got a hold of the registrar. I said, why are you charging so much? He says, well, bad guys won't spend the money on it. So therefore, anything .security must be good. I said, you guys are idiots. Someone's with a stolen credit card, they're going to write for it. Anyway, but that's not here nor there. And then vibesec.io, where you can go have information on that. So this has been really awesome. I have learned a lot. I'm hoping that our audience has learned a lot. And so we've had Nitzan Ziv. He's here with Ox.Security, so you can go follow that more. If you learned something about it, go look, give us a thumbs up or give us some comments or feedback. So in LinkedIn, we love to go ahead and respond with our listeners and the folks that are out there. If you like this, share it with somebody else. Let them know where they got the good information. And we hope that we keep this at a level that you could even have your CIO or CTO or, heaven forbid, your pointy-haired boss listen in on our podcast and get a clue as to what we're talking about. So thank you very much for being part of the CISO Tradecraft audience. This is your host, G. Mark Hardy. And until next time, stay safe out there.